The following is brought to you courtesy of the No Phony Podcast Network, home of independent awesomeness.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of On the Road with Jim Casey. As usual, look at him, the man with just, you know, as of recently, better hair than me, you know, thicker beard. Apparently, he can still bench more than me, even though he hasn't worked out in 25 years. His wrists are bigger than mine and his shoulders. Casey Shearer.
Hello.
Okay. That's all you're going to do? Hello?
Let's ride.
Okay. All right. This is America. Today, we have Jeff Dornick on from, or the author of Church and State, How the Left Used the Church to Conquer America. Jeff Dornick, also from GK on the GK Online. How's it going, Jeff?
Yep, not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, man. Thank you for coming. I was looking at some of your stuff, and you're not the guy that was shot the last three-pointer on YouTube when you YouTube your name. Was that you in high school, or is that some other Jeff Dornick?
No, that was me in high school.
Oh, yeah? You played basketball, too?
Yeah, I played all the way up through high school. I was getting recruited to play college, and then I decided to stay in Arizona at a small little Christian school for college. So I ended up not playing in college. But, yeah, in high school, back in the day, I used to play in a lot of the same tournaments with guys like LeBron James, and I grew up with like the Brooke Lopez and his twin brother, Robin Lopez, and all that kind of stuff. I've known them since they were like, now they're 7 feet tall. Back then they were probably 5'10", 5'11", at 12 years old, way back in the day.
Did you get any moves? Did you get any to do any moves over top of them? Like, LeBron, well, you do I have a hook shot that surprisingly it's still effective today. I've done it over a couple semi-famous basketball players once or twice, and then it was blocked a couple times. But did you ever get any moves on under them? No.
I was more the 3-point specialist. So my junior and senior year of high school, I was pretty much allowed to shoot anywhere inside the half court line was pretty much the rule for me. And so for me, it wasn't as much getting the hook shot over the inside. It was how far back can I go and still make it. That was kind of my challenge.
I mean, it's good to talk to a fellow basketball player. All of my actual friends are saying, Jim, you're terrible. You know, stop talking about basketball because you don't even watch sports, which I don't. But hey, I love playing sports, but no, I don't watch them anymore. I'm sorry, everyone. We have a lot of sports fans. I watch the show, but let's get into something that I've been wanting to ever since I found you on here. Social, you're the author of what's, it looks like two books, Social Injustice. And look, I was saying this today with a friend of mine. You know, I read the word as much as I can. I pray on it. I'm all down the every rabbit hole of biblical prophecies and all that. I love how you're applying the belief of God, God's word, into everything you say, because most people are like, oh, yeah, I have liberal friends that love abortions and they love drinking baby blood and breaking their necks and drinking their spinal fluid. And then the Republicans are like, well, I have a hot wife and a big truck, you know. I love how you debate and talk to people because you don't even know, you don't really come across as either side. You're just like, oh, the word says this. You know what I mean?
And that seems to be the very strange thing for me is, you know, because for me, I grew up being, you know, it was very conservative politically. And then it was very, it's obviously by the word, like, you know, expositional preaching was like, you know, the biggest thing for what church we were trying to find and all that kind of stuff. And the interesting thing for me was that I grew up in this very strict kind of legalistic mindset. I would refer to my family as like a MacArthurite family. Like it's very John MacArthur, hardcore Calvinism, cessationist, all that kind of stuff. And then it was always all those non-Calvinists over there, they're evil. All those people that are charismatic, we don't associate with them because they're probably not even Christians. And then all of a sudden I start my podcast and I'm like, hey, I'll talk to anybody. I'll pick anybody's brain. I'll, you know, converse with anybody. And then I've got people on like Dr. Michael Brown or Larry Gators or, you know, any of my friends. And I'm just sitting here and I'm like, these guys aren't really as bad as I was told that they are. I mean, you know, maybe I disagree with them on some stuff, but at the same time, at a certain point, I'd rather keep reevaluating my position. So it's like, I want to put my best argument forward, hear their best argument, and then I come back and I reevaluate and I figure out, do I need to change what I believe? Or did they not provide a superior argument? So I'm going to come back and what I believe is reinforced. So that's kind of been my mentality a little bit there.
Yeah, also it's like, when you get, I mean, I never get angry. I seriously love everyone. On my best friends are totally, totally left-wing liberals. They love Hillary Clinton. They love Joe Biden. He doesn't have a speaking problem at all. He talks perfectly. He's, you know, Trump.
I need to clarify, too. Joe Biden has the best memory in the history of presidential candidates. I'm just saying.
Right. And I have friends on the right, too, you know, like that, you know, there's guns and America and everything. Which is cool. I love everybody. And, you know, I'm myself open to, look, whether I've been programmed by the word or programmed by TV program and channels and the median thing, we all are in some way. But I like your approach on debate of how you got to know what are we talking about and having the people there to actually discuss, well, are we talking about abortion? Or are we going to talk about the left wing, you know what I mean? Like have people around there that are actually just like, okay, let's actually talk about it and have one-on-one conversation instead of, oh, you would love babies, you Trump supporting, you know, or person that likes pro-life would be like, I know our abortion's great. They're only $400 now. It's so much fun. You know what I mean? Like I like your kind attitude on actually, because people are going to listen to you if you're just like, I can bench press more than you, you're wrong. Like, they're not going to listen to that.
Yeah, well, and that's just kind of my philosophy and everything is that I hardcore believe everything that I believe, like 110%. But at the same time, I'm open to the fact that I might be wrong on something. And so that becomes kind of my mentality of, you know, a lot of people, especially in my camp, you know, that's the pretty, pretty strong, straight by the Bible, you know, kind of mentality. A lot of times, like, they don't want to talk to people that they disagree with. They just want to talk to people in their own little circles, their own little camps. I always say that they hurl like a grenade at a different camp and then they come back and pat each other on the back for, you know, taking down somebody else. And I'm just like, I actually want to engage with somebody. Right. And it gets me in trouble a little bit with my crowd, but I mean, you know, that's the fun part of all of this kind of stuff. But I think to a certain degree, I think we kind of need to make ourselves a little bit more uncomfortable if we're going to move forward as a church and also as a society right now, because we're so polarized. It's so much about hating each other and destroying each other. And I'm just sitting here and I'm like, why can't I talk to, like, for me, I'm totally opposed to Black Lives Matter, the organization. But I would gladly have a total rational conversation with somebody and talk about their background, their history, what, you know, where they're coming from and all that kind of stuff. Because I want to get inside their head and I want to understand, why do you believe this? And I think that we need kind of more of that mentality and stuff instead of all this cancel culture and then just, you know, the YouTube videos of so-and-so destroys so-and-so. And I'm like, what is that accomplishing?
Right, exactly. And if you want to talk about your book, like, do you talk about this with church and state of like how you try to approach people and honestly, I mean, they're using scientism or humanism or the religion of whatever they're pushing as church. And that's like, if you look at the actual word, people call me crazy all the time. It's not actually religious. It's actually the most open thing ever. You could be a Satan worshiper and I could be, and I'm like, well, yeah, God's letting, he lets Satan roam for now, you know? You're literally free to do everything you want. It's almost like they hate, because obviously Black Lives, who said Black Lives didn't matter? Nobody.
Yeah.
And we had Bishop Larry on, where he's like from the thuggy cult of how Burham, Morty, and Liveth, and it literally says Black Lives Matter, and that's why they have that whole kind of thuggy mentality, because no one said it, and it's just like trying to break us down. So go into your church and state on how you see it as it's a belief, just like, you know, we believe in Jesus.
Yeah, well, you know, and basically our book, Church and State, you know, it'll be coming out in September right now. And kind of my mentality with this has been, and it's the same thing with our previous book, Social Injustice, where I did, again, kind of going back to my mentality with all of this is I'm not the ultimate expert in all these different kinds of things. But through my conversations with people, I'm meeting some of these experts. So I'm like, hey, let's gather everybody together and everybody can kind of contribute a chapter with what they're an expert on. And then we can kind of hear from all of their perspectives on this. And so basically, Church and State is kind of piggybacking off of our first book, Social Injustice. So that was specifically on the social justice movement. We compared that with what the Bible says. And then we really broke down a lot of the issues like white supremacy, income inequality, illegal immigration, like a lot of those kinds of social justice issues. Now, Church and State is getting a little bit more into the strategy for pushing towards the globalist agenda of the left. And so really what that's looking at is it's looking at the ways that the left has infiltrated into Christianity, you know, and that's through like attacking the seminaries. It's through infiltrating into the evangelical leadership. You know, my chapter is actually on the celebrity mindset within Christianity and how the left is actually using that to change the trajectory of the church. Because when you think about it, evangelicalism used to be pretty straightforward conservative. And now what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of, you know, the Christian leaders like Russell Moore and Al Mohler and Tim Keller, and they're just parroting the AOC Bernie Sanders talking points. And we're like, when did this happen? Because these guys we used to think were, you know, pretty straightforward, you know, conservative thinking guys. And all of a sudden now they're sounding more like Bernie Sanders than they are, you know, anything found in God's word. And so for, you know, that's really what Church and State is taking a look at. And then looking at what are they trying to accomplish? If they can, so the premise of the book is if they can destroy the church, if they can change the church enough, the church, it really, in all reality, is the last final stand of holding true to our American ideals, the fundamentals, what the founding fathers originally intended for us with freedom and liberty and all that kind of stuff. If the church goes, the moral compass of our nation goes, and we're going to be going straight towards socialism and communism and a very anti-God ideology. So that's really what we're trying to deal with here.
That's so funny you said that, because who was I talking to? My sister-in-law or somebody about, okay, well, I mean, however you want to look at it, the Simpsons always, like, call, like, they have weird, you know, forecasting and futuristic kind of things that happen. Do you remember the episode when Ned Flanders became president, principal of the elementary school? I don't know if you watched that, if the Simpsons at all.
I see clips and stuff, but I don't know if I've seen that one.
So just like what you're saying about, they're just trying to destroy, which the Bible predicts is, they're trying to destroy the word by saying it's whatever, even though that's where you get love from. But, and the don't kill and, you know, love everyone. But when Ned Flanders became principal, he was Superintendent Chalmers and Principal Skinner, and the old principal, because they fired him for something, they were walking down the hallways and the superintendent was like, wow, I got to tell you, you know, and the school's running great because Ned Flanders is a Christian. He's like real Bible thumper type of character. And he comes over the loudspeaker and he's like, let's thank the Lord for a beautiful, and then Superintendent Chalmers hears that. He goes, that sounded like a prayer. A prayer in a public school? God has no place within these walls. And then they fire Ned Flanders and then re-put in the Principal Skinner. And then the school goes back down to normal, what they say is normalcy of just not being good again. But when God was there, it was like run so good. Kids were not, you know, things were nice. And it's so clear of how they're infiltrating it by... But you can't, because like you can't change the like, it's, if people read it, which they don't, I have a feeling they're gonna burn this, just like in Star Wars, the latest one, when Yoda burned the tree down, which Yoda literally means demon, is the demon that people can the occultists can summon. I have a feeling they're gonna try to burn it, just like he burnt all the old Jedi Force the texts in the new. I don't know if you saw the new Star Wars, but.
No, I mean, you know, for some reason, I'm the weird Calvinist that never watched Star Wars. So I don't
Me too, know man. I never saw it either.
How? Well, yeah, okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but I was just going to say, I feel, and I've been saying this for a little while, I feel like we're getting to the point to where we're kind of at that point of needing another reformation, right? And one of the things that I've said a few different times on different shows is that I feel like at this point, when you look at the world history, there's been essentially two reformations. You know, there's the one that everybody knows about, Martin Luther, you know, the reformers, all that kind of stuff. But in all reality, Jesus himself initiated the original reformation with, you know, breaking away from the Jewish religion, because the Pharisees had taken things so far away from what God originally intended, right? And so they had made it this, you know, they were these elitists, you know, they were the most holy ones and all that kind of stuff. And then Jesus is like, yeah, this isn't how we're going to do things. So he broke away from them, began the Christian church and that sort of thing. This, a very similar thing happened with the Reformation with Martin Luther, is that it became a very elitist religion where the priests, they controlled the narrative. They controlled what was taught. They kept the word of God out of the people's hands because it was written in Latin and only the priests understood Latin. It was their way of kind of controlling the messaging. And I feel like we're kind of at that position again today with a lot of the what I call the evangelical elite, where they'll say, well, you didn't go to seminary. You don't understand the original Greek. So you don't really understand it. So because you don't understand the Greek language and understand the ins and outs of the philosophical background of the historical aspects of everything, you can never overrule anybody who's gone to seminary. And I feel like to that certain degree, it's almost like they're doing the exact same thing that the Catholic Church did and the Pharisees did, of they're controlling the narrative. And what they're doing is they're literally taking us down this path that is totally anti-biblical, anti-God, all that kind of stuff. But they're doing it in the name of trying to stay true to God's word. And then all of us simpletons are just a bunch of idiots that can't keep up with their highly trained Greek philosopher, Greek theologian type mentality. And I think that that's really dangerous right now.
It's like they love their intellect. Like, they have to be so much, oh, you're just so stupid. Like, which is satanic, because in Satanism, they hate stupid people. That's why, oh, well, look at all those dumb hicks. You know, like, when the word, it's so easy to read when you have it. You don't even have to know the entire, it's just literally faith and the works comes with faith. But like, my thing is like, why aren't they praying? Like, why aren't the left? There's just no, hey, well, Jesus said that. No, it's mainly, and not that the right is better, or, you know, oh, they're so great as a people.
Right.
It's just, they're the only ones talking about God. I feel like you never go on CNN and they'll, like, I mean, rarely. I mean, cause I watch, like, I'll have it on and I'll Fox and I'll, or, I mean, if it's on, I don't even watch TV, but my, okay, so yeah, I live with my mom. But anyway, she might have it on. But she, it'll be on. And like, they never talk about God or the word or anything. And not that Fox is any better. I get it, because they're, you know, yeah, we're so hot. And, you know, we're doing the right thing. We love God because prosperity. They can kind of be like that sometimes. Like, God's their sugar daddy or something, which, you know, you shouldn't. But like, I feel like I wish they would just say a little bit, you know, because like, that would help their entire argument. But they don't.
Yeah, but at the same time, a lot of the problem that we have to understand about the left is that oftentimes they get distracted because leftism is rooted in an anti-God philosophy of socialism, Marxism, communism, all that kind of stuff. And so when you start to go down that path, what we're seeing with the left, what we're seeing with the Democrats, and even a lot of the evangelical leaders right now, is they're making everything about this victim mentality. Right. And so what happens is that when you begin to have a victim mentality, and that goes for the whole Black Lives Matter movement, that goes for gender inequalities, income inequality, illegal immigration, a lot of these different kinds of things, it's oftentimes rooted in this victim mentality where I'm being oppressed by somebody over here. And there's this ranking of hierarchy of who's the most oppressed and who's the least oppressed. And in all reality, to a certain degree, it's even changing the gospel to the point to where Jesus is no longer saving you from yourself. He's no longer saving you from your sin. He's saving you from being oppressed by that straight, white, rich guy over there. And that to me, I think, is a really dangerous aspect of all of this as well. And that's really what leftism is rooted in.
You're 100%. And what is the first sign of oppression is demon possession. As soon as you feel oppressed, that's demon possession. Like, and you can call it whatever you want, but that's a spirit that comes in. No, you're not, you know, that's just bashing you down. You can call, literally, we have dominion over the spirit and we can just trample that. You know, I took that white privilege test. How much white privilege do you have? And I take, because my father's an immigrant. And they're like, did you ever go into a store at a mall and get looked at weird? And I was like, yeah, every time. Have you ever walked into Gucci or into like one of these fancy stores? And it's all, you know, people from different countries, which is great. Like, I'm like, that's all. I mean, I can't afford, like, I'm, you know, I'm very, you know, I'm of a lesser, you know, income. And like, but I go in there and there's like, you do know that that's $900. And I'll like put it like, oh, I'm sorry. But that's the devil in me saying, Jim, you're worthless. You can never afford that. Even though I physically can't, but I don't care about it anyway. But it's all just crazy nonsense stuff, and I feel, yeah, that's what they're doing. They're trying to separate it using the word that were hateful, and they're doing the same. I just told Larry Gators they wore white back then as KKK. Nobody liked them. Everyone made fun of them. The media and all the newspapers were talking in their language. They loved, like, the KKK are cool. Wow, they're go to their clam bakes. But now they're black in Antifa garb, wearing black, and now they hate white people. So it's just the same thing, just flipping. And you say, why can't we love everybody? Like, oh, so you're a sexist, racist, homophobic, Islamophobic, you know.
Because only racists want to love everybody. I'm just saying. It's... But here's the interesting thing about all of this is that when we actually look at the root of the background of like leftism and this kind of like victim mentality, right? It's all rooted in the same strategy that Satan has always used. Go back to Genesis. Look when Satan originally tempted Eve, right? What did he do? He told Eve that she was being oppressed and victimized by God and said, look, you deserve this, but God is keeping it from you. So why don't you just go take it? That's exactly what is happening today. It's just maybe in a different form or whatever it is, but it's basically the left argument right now is telling, let's say, minorities. You're like, see those white people over there? They're keeping you down. They're keeping you from prosperity. It's the exact same argument that Satan used in Genesis with Eve.
Right. And the same thing is with the whole, the modern racism is from Charles Darwin and his book, The Origin of Species, of when science, because him and Marx were friends, not friends, but they like, oh, they loved each other's work. They're both occultists doing all the dark art stuff and the seances. When he wrote his book of the Origin of Species, the whole title, just type in Google what the whole title is and you'll see, oh, the lesser races. And they're literally like, yes, we're smart. White people are more advanced than black people. They're monkeys. And then science is like, oh, yeah, we're scientists because we went to college and we know what we're talking about. And then everyone that was like knew the word was like, actually, no, I'm pretty sure, you know, we're all human. We're all one race. And they're like, no, we're scientists. We know what we're saying. It's just like that. And that's where the whole monkey and all that stuff about Africans, that came from them. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with science, but it came from there. And they hate themselves because it's always like, well, you wanted that. You know, now you're just changing it and it's flipping. It's like a pendulum.
Yeah.
Who are you going to hate today?
But here's the thing. Leftism is rooted in racism. Evolution is a racist ideology. We should be doing the hashtag cancel Darwin. I'm just saying, like, that's what we need to do. Planned Parenthood is rooted in racism. There's a reason why Margaret Sanger intentionally put the majority of Planned Parenthoods in minority-run communities. And when you look at her initial statements, they were very anti-Black. It was population control, and it was rooted in racism. And nobody cares. It's like the left is trying to say, we're not racist, even though everything we put out is actually has racist results. And, you know, when you look at the welfare state, the reason why they're giving so many handouts to in the minority communities and inner cities and all that kind of stuff is so that way they won't prosper. They're intentionally keeping them down. But then the argument is, we're giving you all this free stuff, even though you're never going to succeed, because in order for you to keep getting the free stuff, you can't make more money.
Right.
But so then they keep them down intentionally, but all the while saying, see those people over there, those conservatives, those, you know, those rich white people, they're the racists, even though they're the ones that actually want to see you prosper, because they're all for freedom and, you know, entrepreneurship and all that kind of stuff. It's this weird backwards thinking where the very racists are the ones that are quote unquote decrying racism. It's a weird backwards world I feel like we're living in right now.
And the social justice is completely, you have to be a wizard like to be able to talk to these people. A friend of mine on Facebook like said something, hey, I love all people, and they're like, you would be a, and I had to like go on Facebook like, no, I, like this dude, like, you know, I knew the guy, and I was like, hey, and they called him racist. You have to like read every one of their things, because that's how they work. Like, their people, they call it the bottomless pit to see who can get worse and more demented and evil and evil. That's why in every form of evil, they always have to kill the last person. Yeah, this is our new god. And it's like Star Wars, when they always kill their father. You have to kill the last one. And it's like the same type of mentality. When I went to help my friend out, I was like, excuse me, you can't call him a racist. He doesn't identify as one. That's your own law. Social identity, you can't call him a she or her. You'll get fined $50, $200 or something. But yet they're calling him a racist. I was like, excuse me, he doesn't identify as one. Like, that's your own law. And this girl literally was like, what? And I just said, just look up social identity. It's part of all the stuff there. And then I actually just said it kindly. And then she's like, huh? And then like never messaged again. And maybe I don't know if that worked, because I don't get angry. I never try not to swear. I do my best, you know, but.
Yeah. I mean, it is a good point about self-identity, because I mean, you know, it's like, if you can self-identify as whatever gender you want, or you can self-identify as, you know, I mean, you know, like there's even, what was it? There was that one lady that self-identified as a different race. Was it? I'm totally blanking on what her name was.
Yes.
She identified as being Black. You know, and I'm like, so why can't we just self-identify as not being racist? I mean, you know, right. All of a sudden, that's the one thing you're not allowed to control your identity with.
And that's, oh man, you know, and it's literally, if they just read, as I said before, if they just read a little bit of the word and just put it in with some of their context, at least a little bit, I would be like, you know, hey, yeah, you know, of course Black Lives Matter. Like, just, but it's not, you're not giving money to them. You're like, if you give to them, it doesn't go to them. It goes to that old white guy that you supposedly hate so much. And what they've already proved that with Act Blue. But that's what they want. They just want someone to control. And it's always like someone gaining power all the time. But they're but going more and more evil with the Ghislaine Maxwell. And do you see about the Wayfair trafficking thing now? That yeah. Apparently you go, I go on a couple of sites to look at it, and now they're saying it's fake news because they asked Wayfair to, were you selling children and body parts? And they're like, no, those were industrial cabinets that are $14,000. And I looked for industrial cabinets, and they're not $14,000. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm like, industrial cabinets for $14,000. Wow. And then but then the second one was, oh no, they were mispriced accidentally all this time.
So now you're taking me down this conspiracy theory road, and I'm going to get in trouble, but I'm going to go down here anyway, because it's fun. And it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. Right. Okay. Yeah. So the thing that was really interesting to me about this whole Wayfair thing was that immediately Twitter, all they would promote in their in the recommended feed was these articles saying that this is disproven, and then and like you were saying, their proof is Wayfair denied that they are trafficking children, and I'm like, that's not proof. That's like asking if O.J. Simpson did he kill somebody, you know what I mean? And he says no. It's like, okay, we're gonna take him at his word. That's proof enough. Okay, he identifies as a non-killer. Wayfair identifies as not trafficking children. Okay, fine. But so then a buddy of mine who I've known for a long time, he actually posted a video on Instagram. He actually went and he bought a $17,000 desk. And because he's like, I want to see what's going to happen here. So supposedly he's going to get this $17,000 desk that if you find it, you could find the exact same thing for $400 somewhere else, or I think even on the Wayfair website, but because it didn't have a human name attached to it, it was only $400. And when it has the human name attached to it, it's $17,000. So wow. Then he's got video of him calling Wayfair and talking to their customer service. And they started blaming the manufacturers and saying, well, you know, the manufacturers, they sent over bad information. It was the wrong description. And it was a glitch in the price. And they put all the blame onto the manufacturer. So my friend goes, well, I'm going to call the manufacturer. So he calls the manufacturer. They had no idea that it was $17,000. They're like, this is like a $500 desk. I don't know what's going on. And so like literally Wayfair is blaming the manufacturers for something that the manufacturers have no control over. It's the Wayfair website. It's the Wayfair company themselves that's actually doing this. And he's got all of this on video, the phone calls, like all that kind of stuff. And then what was really funny was that when he was on the phone with the customer service agent and he's like, you know, I'd like to buy one of these industrial cabinets. And immediately the customer service agent goes, are you calling because of the Twitter rumor? Like out of nowhere. And he's like, what Twitter rumor? And so he kind of plays along with the guy and then the guy starts bringing up like human trafficking and like all this kind of stuff. And he's like, no, he's like, I just want to buy this thing. And they kept trying to convince him to cancel his order, not order the stuff. And then at the end he goes, I'd like to add a pillow to that order. And the guy's like, if you don't have anything else, I'm going to hang up. And so the guy literally hangs up on him. And I'm just sitting here. I'm like, dude, this is nuts. Like the exact same thing is like $300. As soon as you put a name to it, all of a sudden it's 15 grand. And you're just like, this is insane. So we're going to see what happens when he actually gets a shipment.
Oh, but that's
when is that supposed to be?
I have no idea. I wouldn't be surprised if they cancel his order just because they have an idea that
when I saw Sam Tripoli posted that yesterday about the about that Wayfair, I downloaded the Wayfair app immediately, and I found the pillows. I couldn't find the industrial cabinets for the $14,000, but I went and I found the pillows, and I think they were like $14,000-$15,000. And as soon as you click on the pillow, it the price goes back to like the original price. So yep. I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. It's definitely weird. Like, how could there be that many glitches?
Yeah.
And with those names and everything, it's a little weird. Yeah,
because I mean, you know, like it's. I mean, to me, it's like it's just creepy in and of itself that you've got like random human names attached to these things, but it's only the things that are like 10 grand or 15 grand or something insanely expensive. Like that's a red flag, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, it just happens to be there. The people that are missing just happens to be their names.
It's just a coincidence. We'll just go with that one.
I mean, I don't understand. It's just like the community of people that are saying that Trump was best friends with Jeffrey Epstein and all these pictures of him with people. When, according to everything that I've read and listened to, Trump, when he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago, first of all, if Trump was a part of it, well then yeah, throw him in with everybody else. But we were like, you do know we've been telling you about this whole thing for 20 years. All these people, no, Trump's in it. Get him! And then, well, are you going to put them all in? And they're like, well, no, it's definitely Trump. And when he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago, the FBI even has reports of him saying to them, hey, any info you need on the guy, this is years ago, he's like, I'll help you get it, because of he was trying to talked to, I guess, one of the girls that worked there in the spa or something at his estate. And so when the FBI arrested him, I think it was in 2013 or something, Trump was like, any info you need, I'm here to help, because he found out about all that stuff. And whenever you get in pictures with somebody, recently I've been thinking, you know what? I don't want to be in pictures with a lot of people now, because what if like you're in pictures with friends and like there's a couple people that you don't really know and you're like, oh, we're having a good time, and you know, and then that like everyone's like, he's best friend, and then like there's girls around that are having a great time. He raped them. Look how happy they look. They're on drugs. No women could be happy around a guy like that, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the crazy thing with all of this kind of stuff is that basically they'll twist anything to fit their narrative, right? So did either one of you guys see the Jeffrey Epstein documentary on Netflix?
Yeah,
I didn't. I didn't. Okay. I don't know the intent behind it. I didn't.
Okay.
Even watch.
Okay. So here's the thing. It was a very good documentary, very well put together, and they got a lot of the victims, and they were actually telling their story. It was very good from that perspective. The interesting thing was that every single time that Donald Trump was mentioned, they overblew it. And they kept talking about, he was seen at a party with Jeffrey Epstein. He must have been in on all this kind of stuff. And then every time Bill Clinton was mentioned, it was, but we never saw him do anything wrong. We would have meetings. We saw him at lunch. He was on the island, but we never saw him do anything. It was very intentional. So then I started doing a little bit of research, right? Who made the documentary? James Patterson, the famous author, right? James Patterson, just a couple years ago, co-authored a book with Bill Clinton, and they're actually very good friends. So we're going to trust James Patterson, who has an alternative or has bias, essentially, because he's a friend with one of the accused. We're going to trust him to tell us the narrative of who was actually associated with Epstein between Donald Trump and Bill Clinton. I mean, come on. This is like insane.
They just don't like when a man, you know what? Trump obviously has the hottest wife ever in First Lady. I mean, it's like, I mean, maybe, probably in a long time. And they just almost like hate her. Like, don't like a person that's, which I don't care if you're prosperous or not, but like, they're almost like, oh, look at him. He pays for her. Or, you know what I mean? Like that he has to like younger girls, whatever. According to, you know, every girl that you've been around Trump, he just likes full grown women. But like, I mean, it's so crazy that, about the bias. I mean, Bill Clinton was literally with a 21-year-old intern. I mean, it's already proven. And it's just like, no, you know, Trump is because I don't like him. Well, no, not a lot of people probably do, but you know, this world is reverse world. And you know what? I wanted to say this before about, I love how on your, I've seen a couple of your YouTube videos, how you talk, like, you apply New Testament to a lot, because a lot of people, I'm one of them that goes down this rabbit hole too, of the Nephilim and the Book of Enoch and the Pistis Sophia and all the weird stuff. You know, that stuff, it's kind of like, okay, well, let's get past that. We already know, you know, and let's move on to something new. And I dig how you're kind of like applying like the church and how that's now being in. So our seed was infected by the fallen angel, alien, Enoch, Enlil, Enki, whatever you want to call it, looking for gold, mining for gold. I don't know. But we got that part. We're like, yes, there's evil on earth and on the earth, and it's cursed here. Now, what are we going to do? So the church age now is the new thing that they're infecting almost. And
yeah.
And I just want to get back to that and of more of your book on how it's so normal. They're normalizing drag queen. And isn't it cool to chop your balls off? Yeah. I mean, come on. Don't you want to? And Black Lives Matter. Ah, we hate the nuclear family. Ugh. Straight men and women plowing each other and having babies and living on land and having families. Don't you want your parents to be transsexual drag queens that look like monsters? Which, hey, this is America. You can do, that's great. You have fun clubs. You know, downtown. Gay sections downtown are usually fairly clean, you know, nice neighborhoods sometimes. It's America. You could do that. But why wouldn't you promote something that's good? And children, life, growing, get stronger, bench press more, get closer to God. No, God forbid.
Yeah. Well, see, that's my thing too. And again, this is where it's really weird. I tend to get in trouble from the left and the right. I'm in this weird thing where it's like, I feel like the left's ideology is totally wrong. But then at the same time, from a political standpoint, I don't really care what you do from like a legal standpoint, as long as you're not hurting somebody, if you're not breaking a law. You know, it's like everybody makes a big deal about like gay marriage and all that kind of, and I'm just like, why don't we just get the government out of marriage altogether and then the problem is solved, right? You know, as long as you don't force me or a pastor to perform a gay wedding or gay marriage or, you know, officiate the ceremony, it's like, you do you, allow us to teach that's sin. We go about our life, right? From a legal standpoint, that's kind of where I go. What's been interesting is that kind of mentality though has been infiltrating into our theology. And so we're starting to see some organizations like the Southern Baptist Convention, the Gospel Coalition, and they're actually being funded by people like George Soros. And I know every time you bring up George Soros, it becomes a conspiracy theory and all this kind of stuff, but you can trace the money. It's actually there. It's evidence. Somebody like Tim Keller, who's the founder of the Gospel Coalition, deep ties with a lot of these globalist agendas and all that kind of stuff. And what's been happening is they're literally just taking leftist liberal ideology and politics and then trying to couple that with biblical theology and then making things to where it's like they're almost right, but they're not fully right. And I think that's almost more dangerous because it's just a subtle difference. It's a subtle change. So like, for example, you begin to deal with the issue of homosexuality. It's like, for me, as a legal standpoint, I don't care. I'm not going to try to, you know, force anybody or take away, you know, whatever. I'm not going to go down that route. But from a biblical standpoint, the Bible teaches it's a sin. So we can't compromise on that. But then you've got organizations like Ravi Zacharias's organization, the Gospel Coalition, that are promoting guys like Sam Alberry, and they're trying to say that it's okay, it's moral, it's all that kind of stuff. And then they're going so hard after anybody who disagrees with them. So a good friend of mine, Dr. Bobby Lopez, he was actually a seminary professor at the Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary, I believe is the seminary. It's run by Al Mohler and a lot of the Gospel Coalition guys and that sort of thing. And literally all he did was he would share his testimony about how God saved him. He used to be gay. He became a Christian. He repented. And now he's married. He's got children. And he's like, look, this is the power of God. God can literally take you from being in sin, and then he wakes you up, you repent from your sin, and you go this way. He's like, my life is a testimony to the power of God, and God can actually transform your life and change. And he got fired for sharing his testimony. Like literally, he would get called into the president's office, and they would literally say, no more sharing your testimony. All media requests have to go through us. We're going to, you know, and then he basically kept sharing his testimony, and they fired him for it. It's like, this is a whole different ballgame when you're going from beyond just we disagree with you to now we're going to promote one ideology and we're going to fire you for saying something different, even though it's literally just, this is your life. This is what you experienced. You know, it's getting pretty crazy.
Yeah. And if you just accept two ways I can go. If a guy is gay and then he prays about it and becomes, oh, you know what, I'm straight, I want to have a family and all that. That's great. I met a lot of people that were like, well, they're brainwashing him onto how to be straight. I would be like, hey, just do, you know, if God speaks to you in some way, maybe you're just meant to be alone forever. I don't know. I'm not for brainwashing, but I'm for sure. Yeah. Get closer to God any way you can, you know?
Yeah.
And, but what's worse, having that guy, let's say be 8 years old and be like, you know what, mom, I want to be a girl. All right, son, let's go take you into the doctor. Well, what we're going to do is just chop his balls off. And then they force him into what he thinks he should be biologically. Then he grows up, regrets it, which has happened so many times. And then they hate them. And then, like, there's no coming back then. So my thing is maybe that's a little better than chopping what you naturally have off, ripping it, and they turn it into a vagina and somehow – I think, I mean, you could do that for sure. But maybe it's a little better to accept, go to, towards God, whether or not you can still sin, because it's like saying, oh, he's a liar. All right. Yay. He's, because what did Paul say? Liar, thieves, homosexuals, fornicators. You know, everyone watches the podcast. I'm only a man. I, you know, I struggle with things too. And it's hard, you know, but we all have something. And so as long as you're getting closer to God in some way, that can, you know, hopefully end at some point. You can put death to the sin, you know, why Jesus died for us. I mean, if you think about it, why they had set like the sacrifice, even though he was the final sacrifice, it's almost like when you put death to something, your sin, it's, you know, you're free then. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, and that's also part of, you know, understanding the process of sanctification. And I think this is where, you know, some people, you know, there's some people that like the extreme, like, you know, hyper grace, you know, to a certain degree, some of the extreme free grace guys, they'll make it seem like all that matters is that you're justified, you place your faith, and then it doesn't matter what you do for the rest of your life, right? And then there's some of the other guys that believe in like lordship salvation, they take things to the extreme of almost like your salvation becomes this like works-based thing that you have to earn and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just sitting here, I'm like, but sanctification is the process of you becoming more Christ-like over the course of your life. That's the work of the Holy Spirit in your life. So that's going to be him working, and you're going to gradually become more Christ-like, and you're going to be learning from his word, and you're going to be repenting. It's a continual thing, right? And I think that to a certain degree, when we're dealing with sins like homosexuality, or, you know, different things like that, to a certain degree, it's like we do need to show some grace to people that are struggling with those sins as well, because it's like it is a process. It's the Holy Spirit working your life. For some people, it's going to be an immediate repentance and they're going to overcome it immediately. Other people, it's going to be a lifelong struggle as they're becoming more Christ-like. And I think to a certain degree, we need to show some grace there as well, but we can't go so far the other way to then make it seem like homosexuality is not a sin as long as you don't act on it, kind of a thing. It's like, we still need to repent. We still need to, you know, do the right thing and head in the right direction, but we can't so go so far the other way to like justify that mentality as well.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta love everybody. I mean, like, I love everybody. And like, we all struggle with something. I know liars, fornicator, you know, everyone struggles with something. And it's almost like I said before, there's people that are fallen and lost, and there's people that are for sure, you know, trying to go to, but they're all exactly still the same, at the same level. And like, I personally feel that God can talk to anybody at any time, whether you're an atheist or anybody, and just put you on some sort of path that he needs you for at some point. And that's why, again, like you said, just loving, you're allowed to do whatever you want. And the reason that we have the ring on our finger is from Saturn, because that was a religious thing. That's what the Romans worship, because they were religious. All we want to do is be free. And the government's like, no, you want to get married? Well, they've tried to change the word. See, you see how it comes in? Marriage under the government. What about gay people? Well, now we have to change the word to man and man. They're always changing. Like, you can't just change, you know. That's why we shouldn't have had the government in the first place. Oh, but don't you want insurance? Don't you want all these, you know, cool, like, oh, we have a wedding, and all of a sudden it becomes like a Babylonian, like, fire ceremony. And, you know, that's not the way. It's just like, hey, us two under God, bam. I don't mean, oh, I'm not Illuminati, I'm not trying to do the, but
I can't believe you threw that sign. I mean, we're gonna have to have a conversation on that.
Another thing I wanted to get into, so I was reading on, or I was listening to your thing on gender roles and what the Bible says about, it's not like men are trying to be like, you woman, make food. No, it's, you're better at this. But it's not even, go ahead. Well, I'll let you explain it, because I'll just ruin it basically.
No. Well, you know, like, the thing is that I think a lot of times both the left and the right within evangelicalism gets this wrong, because we're not getting down to the root issue, right? So when you're dealing with gender roles within like marriage, right? Really what this is coming down to is a reflection of our relationship with God, right? So what God does throughout the entire Bible is he uses these physical things to represent a spiritual lesson. And marriage is one of those spiritual lessons, right? And so the reason why God established different gender roles, and Paul talks about this, and I'm totally blanking on what the passage is, but basically what Paul was saying is he's like, husbands are supposed to love their wives as Christ loved the church, even laying his life down for his bride, right? And so that's supposed to be the way that husbands are supposed to treat their wives, because it's a reflection of Christ, you know, caring for the church. And in the same way, the wife is supposed to submit to her husband in the same way that the church submits to Christ. And it's this thing where both sides need to represent their role in the spiritual allegory in order for marriage to work successfully, in the same way that Jesus will always fulfill his role. Now the church needs to fulfill its role in that relationship. And so that's one of those things where I think a lot of times, a lot of conservatives will start talking about gender roles, and it's always the man is the leader. The man is supposed to dominate the woman, and it's because God created him first, and it's the created order. It's like, no, take a step back. The husband is supposed to lead lovingly in the same way that Christ lovingly laid down his life for the church. So it, to me, that's more responsibility on me as the husband to my wife to do the right thing. And like, my job is to exemplify Christ. If I'm not exemplifying Christ, I'm failing. But for whatever reason, the church oftentimes only focuses on the wife's role. And it's like, to me, the bigger, more important role is me, because I'm supposed to be exemplifying Christ, which is a pretty high standard last I checked.
Yes. And, you know, it's not like you're saying, oh, you can't do this, that, and the other. Anything can be like turned around as long as you're still keeping that. That's what they're trying to say. Well, the woman should be able to go to work. Well, yeah, that's great. That was never, and if that was a law, I guarantee it was probably a left-handed path law that said women cannot work because God said so. Or like, I was working in Austin, Texas for a while. I was a cleaner, and or fabric cleaning and carpet cleaning and stuff. And I would go in these huge, the biggest homes I've ever been in. I'm saying like some of them are like 70 million maybe. And like your compound and everything. Every huge one, it was always, the man was never there. He was always away. Always one income. And like, but then they had like 20 assistants that the wife had to take care of. And they're saying, well, the women have more work to do inside the house. I'm like, why are you looking at it like that? Just build your own house. I'm not even looking at it like, oh, the man's the hunter and the woman is the nester. And you know, we have this thing that we hunt with, and they have this thing that they're nesting with, and, you know, it always just has to be this big, you know, throbbing biological urge of just constant men poking, women keeping, and baby, like, no, it's not like that. It's, they're trying to make you to label it like something. Yeah. They're trying to label it as parts. The only role is, it's literally love, and do your, and make the marriage actually work. That's the role.
But I mean, like even look at, you know, I think a lot of times when we get into this whole, especially again, within the conservative side of things. And again, I'm a conservative, but I'm more critical of the conservative side than anything, because I feel like, you know, they can take things too far. Right. So it's like when you're dealing with the gender roles, oftentimes it's like the wife is not allowed to do anything without permission from her husband. And I think that that's a wrong way to look at things, primarily because Is that how Christ works with his church? In the sense of Christ is giving us, he's telling us how he wants us to live, right? But then he gives us the freedom to go out and actually live. He gives us the freedom to make mistakes. He gives us the freedom to learn from our mistakes. He's not just sitting here and like, you have to come here and you have to get permission before I will allow you to go to work. It's like, no, here's the general principles. Here's how I want you to live. Now go live. And I think that that's a better way, you know, to live. Like, I want my wife to thrive. I want her to, you know, make her own decisions and learn and grow, whatever it is. I'm not just sitting here as like a domineering authoritarian, you know, dictator in my house. Like, you have to do everything that I say, because that's not a reflection of how Christ treats his church. And that's something that we need to remember as well.
And Jesus also said, you know, submit yourselves to one another when talking. And, you know, I mean, like, both of you got to be like, all right, let's work it out. Cause I love debating anybody that I'm with, even like friendly, whatever. you know, sometimes I pick out passages that are like really hard for me to comprehend. You know what I mean? Like, cause I think the word can offend us at any point because we're all part of, you know what I mean? We're like, wow, how, like, I'm just burning in hell forever. You know what I mean? I like, but thank you for Jesus for saving me. But I know there's a scripture or where Paul said, I don't know the passage, but it's the man is the head of the household. Like Jesus is the head of above the man. The man is below Jesus, like the church, and the wife is below the man. And that's like a hard thing for people to understand. I get it sounds very like, you know, I'm stepping all over you, but how can you kindly try to tell somebody how that makes sense to you? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of goes back to like what I was saying about it being a reflection of our relationship with Christ, you know? And I think a lot of that comes down to, we have to understand our roles and we have to understand why we have these roles and why we're trying to fulfill them. And again, if we can really focus on that spiritual aspect of what our relationship is actually supposed to be representing, I think it becomes less offensive because we realize that when we're going through life, we are doing this as a physical representation to others about the gospel, you know, because that's really what this comes down to, is like the relationship between Christ and the church and the relationship between a husband and a wife is supposed to reflect and point to the gospel and salvation and all of that. And I think that's an important aspect to have as well.
Right. Yeah, that's, I mean, thank you for, I mean, it's, I like to go pick out verses that are very hard to basically say right now in these times. And I just try to like, be like, okay, how, because you know, someone's going to be there. Well, they said in the Bible that women are stupid and men are smart, or something, like they'll make it up.
Well, see, here's the thing. I've heard several pastors actually say that, that the Bible teaches that women are not as smart as men, and that's why they're supposed to submit. And what they'll do is they will cite that Eve was fooled by Satan, and that Adam actually wasn't fooled by Satan. He actually just didn't fulfill his role as the leader of the family, and then that is why women have to submit, is because in a sense they're stupider. And I'm like, I don't think that's what the Bible's saying there, you know, and I think it's, we can't glean things that aren't actually there and project that into there. And to me, that's just a sexist ideology that's bigoted against women.
My approach at it is Adam bit the apple because he saw that she died. And he's like, I love you so much, Eve, let's go together. Cause he wasn't deceived. He saw it. And he was like, you know what? You lost your job at the company. We lost our, let's go together. Oh, cause I'm falling in love. Oh, mm-hmm. Cause he loved her. But anyway, real quick before we end, finish up, just, you know, First Peter, sometimes you got to give a reason, or be prepared to give a reason for your hope, in the Lord. So how did you come to Jesus? What was your moment of coming to Christ? And,
yeah, well, you know, so like for me, you know, growing up, I was always in a Christian family, but like I was saying a little bit before, was, you know, it was a pretty legalistic mindset, and it was a very like behavior focused, you know, kind of mentality. And I think it was when I was in, I was actually in junior high, we went on a mission trip down to Topeka, Mexico, and you know, that was like the first time where I'm like, okay, like, I'm actually seeing missionaries and what they're actually teaching and preaching to a very Catholic, you know, Mexican community, which, you know, Catholics are pretty, can be pretty, you know, legalistic and by the book and behavior oriented and things like that. And, you know, they're preaching this gospel that was completely opposite of that. It's, you know, it's like Ephesians 2:8-9, for by grace you are saved by faith, not of works, lest any man should boast. And that's an important distinction. And I think for me, that was that moment where I'm like, oh, now I get it, you know? And then just kind of from there, just growing and just realizing the importance of God's grace, and then just kind of going through that sanctification process of trying to become more Christ-like. And it's just, it's like an ongoing process, but that was really that moment when I'm like, oh, that's what the gospel is all about.
Right. That's great. You know, that moment of when, when it comes to you and you're like, for me, it's so applicable in every, what we perceive as time. It's so applicable in every time period, in every sort of the day, on every time. And that turnover there was just so, I'm like, wow, it makes everything so clear. And I mean, for all the listeners out there, you love everyone. You know, you're a Satanist, but you're not killing people and forcing people. You're maybe a little lost, but you love Satan. You know, Jesus, he helps you. You're a Christian. And you're just drinking too much, maybe on the weekends, you know, you want to hang out sometimes. Look, I can't help, but, you know, Jesus will help you. We're all welcome, trans, gay, everyone is the same, like, we're all sinners. But yeah, that is the only thing that helps everybody, no matter what, and they're trying to cut that and make me like, no, humans, we're God.
Well, see, and that's the interesting thing to me about a lot of this. When you actually understand the gospel and you actually understand God's role in saving us and that sort of thing, like, to me, it's very humbling, because I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm a sinner just like every non-Christian. Like, there's literally no difference between me and a non-Christian except the fact that God saved me, right? And so for me, that's humbling. I think a lot of people, they start to get this pride of, well, I'm saved, and that person over there, they're not. And look how horrible all those people are. All those celebrities, look how disgusting they are, and they're gay, and they're this, and they're that, and whatever. And I'm just sitting here, I'm like, but we're all sinners. We all deserve eternal punishment in hell. And the only reason why we're not is because Christ died on the cross and became a Christian. So to me, that should be humbling. And so, like, somebody who's gay, it's like, okay, that's cool, but I'm a sinner too. Like, we can't look down on people because of their sin. We have to realize there's literally no difference between us except for the saving power of Christ. And that's an important reminder, I think.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much. We're saved because we're sinners.
Mm-hmm.
Case, are you got anything else?
I have nothing, man. Thank you so much for doing this, man. Just tell everyone where they can find your book, pre-order, websites, all that good stuff, social media.
Of course, I'll try to do it quickly because there's like a million different things. If you go to gatekeepersonline.com/store, you can find our book, Social Injustice, and then you can also pre-order the book, Church and State. If you use the code Jeff, you'll actually get a free ebook download of Pastor Sam Jones' book, Why I'm Pro-Life. And then I'm also the co-founder of a conservative organization called the American Conservative Movement. We put on what we call the Saving America conferences about every 3 weeks or so. And the next one's actually going to be coming up on Wednesday. And we've had some really cool, conservatives speaking at that. And then I'm also the co-founder of another conservative podcast network called the Freedom First Network. And that network has a bunch of different shows. We're going to be bringing on Jerry Wayne's going to have a show. He's that union worker who confronted Joe Biden, and Joe Biden called it an AR-14. We've got Mindy Robinson coming on with a new show. We've got a bunch of really cool podcasts on there as well. That one you can find at freedomfirstnetwork.com. But pre-order the book, gatekeepersonline.com/store.
All awesome, right, man. Thank you. Yeah, Jeff, thanks for coming on. We're just secretly I feel like I'm like, you know what, Case, you're gonna just keep getting God, you know, and all the time, like, I'm here, you know, or this whole podcast is we're
trying to get me to come over to the dark side.
Yeah, but I was just gonna do the pyramid thing again, you know, because our third dimensional minds are so, I'm like, just gotta see the light at the top.
Well, thank you, Jeff. We appreciate it, man.
Of course. It was a lot of fun.